Salut, eu sunt Cezar Gheorghe, ascultați podcastul Narativ. Astăzi la podcastul Narativ vorbim cu scriitorul Burhan Sonmez, o conversație realizată la Festivalul Internațional de Literatură și Traducere Iași. Burhan Sonmez, welcome to Filit, welcome to Iași, welcome to Romania. Your book, Stone and Shadow, has just been published in translation. It centers on the story of Avdo, who is a gravestone artist, but we follow him in a very wide spectrum of space and time, which traverses recent history of Turkey, and also does a great job in showing the complexity of all the ethnicities, of all the different ethnicities, of all the different historical events, all the conflicts. And I was wondering, what sparked your imagination for a character like Avdo?
Thank you very much for this meeting. This is my first time in Iași, even though I've been to Romania many times. Just last week I was in Sibiu, but being in Iași and seeing that this wonderful group of people, you know, coming together for literary discussion, amazing. And regarding your question about the story of Avdo, when I wanted to write that story, I wanted to write actually the background before the story. The background was a world that we live in, you know, as a character, you know, we all have a different life. But whatever our personality is actually being affected the world that we are going through, it's like watching someone on the stage, but behind them you see that on the screen
the video projection.
Yes, there are different views from city or from countries, from the world. I wanted to bring them together because a personal history is not very much independent from a social history. What we live today being affected by what happened in the recent years, even maybe in the longer past, what happened 100 years ago or 200 years ago in certain places, still affecting us. And we can see this, you know, in every level. With this book, when I wrote Avdo's story, I wanted to see what created Avdo. Avdo has a personality, who and what shaped that personality in that way? Why he became a man like this? In order to understand this, I went in his psychology and also social background together.
When you decided to move him a lot, because he moves actually quite a lot in space and time as well, was there a conscious decision, was there a motivation for this, to choose exactly those places and exactly those events and to meet those people?
When I wrote that structure of the book, I always had this in my mind. Travel in time actually means travel in space. When you change place, actually you change time. Yeah. So they come together. In order to understand the time, I said, okay, I will follow the change in places, the change of spaces, cities, countries. And through that, I would be able to, my hero, Avdo, would be able to travel in time. And within that time, we would see the historical background and also the social background of an individual person.
Avdo doesn't really know his parents. He grew up as an orphan. There seems to be a predilection in your books for people. So the protagonist of your previous book, Labyrinth, Boratin, has lost his memory. He has lost his origin in some way, we can say. Are you preoccupied in a conscious way with this theme of loss in your books?
As you very well defined, I think it's kind of my psychological stand. I don't know why, but I keep asking this question to myself. I say, what is our past and which one is real? Even in political developments across the world, every new incident in any country suddenly start to describe the past, to redefine the past. Look at the war in Ukraine and Russia, or the war in Palestine and Israel, or the war in the Middle East between Turkish army and Kurdish forces. Each one of them telling you a different story of the past in order to justify their current position. Then it means, you know, if you want to understand or convince other people about your current position, you need to tell them a story. A story means the reality of the past. Okay, which one is correct? Which one is, let's say, right than more right than the other one? And same for our individual history. We always remember when something happens, we remember what happened to us when we were a child, especially in family stories. Having an argument with your brother or sister, with your wife or with your parents or with your cousins, suddenly everyone remembers history in a good or bad way, and throughout reading that history, and then you are trying to justify your current action and position. But the strange thing is, everyone remembers and interprets the past in a different way. How is it possible? We live together the same thing, but your outcome is totally different, especially between couples. We see this very much.
As a follow-up to your answer, can this, the truth, in inverted commas, of fiction, of literature, compete in some way with the narratives imposed on society by political forces or maybe political regimes? Does literature have this power, you think?
I think literature doesn't give a certain direction. It gives a method. It says to us that it is possible to see things from a different angle. Mm-hmm. Okay, try to understand from a different angle. Because usually politicians always tell you that there is a door for this reality. Come through the door. But in literature, we always open a new window. We say, okay, see things from this window. If it's not convincing or beautiful enough, okay, then open another window. So that's why art is always surprising, because every window showing us the same thing, but in a different angle.
When I read the description of Avdo working on the tombstones, he's very much as engaged as an artist, as a sculptor, as someone like Michelangelo with searching for the perfect piece of marble, as much as somebody who we call an artist. So is he a sort of a metaphor for the artist in your book?
I think yes, it's a very good answer. Once I met a worker many years ago. A young man came to my house, a plumber. Mm-hmm. He was repairing some problem in the bathroom. He was a simple man, you can say. Okay, he didn't have a proper education, maybe. He was not reading or writing. And for a few days, he worked in the bathroom. And at some point, he said that, you know what makes me happy? When I finish this work today, and if I am very successful, okay, to correct things in this pipeline or something in the wall, then I am going to have a beautiful sleep. I was amazed with this answer. A plumber who is repairing pipes or tiles in bathroom, he is so happy because he's a creator. He is creating something, and that gives him satisfaction. I think it is the same thing that an artist feeling in the same way. We feel that happiness and joy and beauty of creation. And then when I write a beautiful page, that night I sleep like a baby.
I was wondering, I have a question regarding style. Your style seems to be very much influenced by poetry. You started as a poet. And also in Labyrinth, there is this rhythm, there's this musical rhythm to the prose. How do you develop the style of a book? How do you start to develop? Is there a certain attention to a kind of rhythm or a kind of voice? So how do you go about, you know, creating this style?
I think that's a very good, very important question. It is like finding a rhythm when you compose a song. You know, usually composers or singers, they say, I have a rhythm nowadays, it's in my mind, but I haven't, you know, caught it yet fully. Same thing about writing a novel. The most difficult part of my novel, always the first page. The first page is so difficult because you know the story. It's not about creating a story because you know the beginning, the middle, sometimes even the end is in your mind. But the style, what will the rhythm of the book be? You mm-hmm. don't know that, but you have a feeling. You know, this is the story, this is the main character. The book should have this pace, this step, this rhythm, but you don't know what it is. So you try to write one page and next day you don't like it. And then you delete that page and then you write another page. Writing the first page of the book always takes about 1 year until you find that rhythm. When you find that rhythm after 1 year, the rest looks very easy for me. Then you because you know the song now, you mm-hmm. have to just sing it, you know, work for it and finish it.
Is there a challenge in finding the story as well? I mean, finding what the story is actually about as challenging as a form as well?
For me, the story and the form, they are challenging, but they are not so difficult. For me, a feeling is important. I don't mm-hmm. know how to describe it. With every story, I'd like to transmit or to reflect a sense of feeling in the story, in the character. I don't know what that feeling is because I want to understand and find it. The only way is to write and finish the book. So that's why the beginning is so difficult. Then I'm writing. When I finish, when I say, yes, I did it, then I understand the feeling that I've been looking for. So in order to materialize or realize that feeling, I follow that story and then shape it in a certain way that I can reflect that feeling.
Istanbul seems to be a fully formed character in your books. Why are you so preoccupied with choosing Istanbul for your stories? So I think you have at least 3 novels which take place in Istanbul.
Istanbul and rural part of Turkey, where my village is, are together at the center of my writing. And especially Istanbul is very much prominent and dominant in the stories because it has a huge history and still in the world, it has a big place. When I write Istanbul, I had a danger because in our literature in Turkey, it is an easy topic because in the last 200 years, everybody has written about Istanbul. Every movie has been about Istanbul. Every song is about Istanbul still. So what are you going to do differently? Why are you writing something new? Is it really new? That was the question to me. And my answer to myself, I will tell the story of Istanbul, not dividing Istanbul in 2 different parts, like East and West. Instead, I said I will divide Istanbul as underground and overground Istanbul. The dark Istanbul and the Istanbul in light. To these opposite directions, then I try to reshape my own Istanbul. Because in our literary history, Istanbul always being shaped in East and West schema.
You also in your own life have encountered forces that belong to the political power, to the regime in power, so encountered oppression in some form or another. I want to ask you, because you are also the president of Penn about this idea today, to write today about conflict and crisis and these clashes of different ethnicities and different political powers. Is it for you something which came about in an easy way, or was it a direct byproduct of your own confrontation with oppression and with power?
Like everyone in Turkey, I think I was born in those political conflicts. Mm-hmm. In every decade, we went through a different new clashes in social or political arena. So you cannot run away from that, unfortunately. I wish I was in a different country without any political problems or fights and to focus on other more beautiful things. But social reality, some things you cannot change. You cannot change your past. Only you can maybe influence your future. So when I write, I talk about that kind of things. And of course, in my talks and speeches, I mention those issues much more than I do in my writing. Maybe the desire is, we were born in this past, but let's change it in a better way, so the future generations will be born in a more beautiful environment. That's just a hope. Of course, we cannot change everything immediately, but the evolution of human society, if it takes ages, and we are part of that big ocean, okay, let's be a good part of that ocean.
You go back and forth from Cambridge to Istanbul. So in some way we can say that you are a writer in exile. Is there a specific condition of writing in exile? Do you feel that the situation is somehow different? And how does that impact your writing?
I have two different answers to these questions. The direct answer is this. I became a writer in exile. Before that, I was a lawyer when I was in Turkey. Then I had problem with political authorities and I found myself in exile. Then I started to write novels. And that means, as a novelist, I was born in exile. Mm-hmm. It is my homeland. And the second way of answering your question is about my language. Now I write in Turkish. Of course, I published 5 books written in Turkish. But Turkish is not my mother tongue. I learned it at school. My mother tongue is Kurdish. When I was little, it was a forbidden language. We couldn't use it. We couldn't find any book in Kurdish. So I started to write novels in Turkish. Turkish is our exile language in our own culture. So in any way, exile is my soul.
Your situation somehow resembles that of Paul Celan, writing in German, writing in the language of the oppressor. But I have also a question about translation, because this festival, Filit, that we are at right now is also a festival dedicated to translation, to the translation of literature. You are a highly translated writer in 42 languages. How do you go about collaborating with your translators? Does English have a special place, and then it all spreads from English to other languages? How do you? What is your approach to working with translations?
I don't have a special approach, because the approach is being directed by translators themselves. If they want to approach you, they come. In many languages, I know translators always contact me. They ask me mm-hmm. questions. Sometimes we meet in person and we talk, because they ask questions about the meaning of certain words, certain sentences. They say, we can translate it into this language into different ways. Which one would be better for your novel? But in other languages, some translators never contact you. They don't want to contact to the author. Their contact is only with the text. Maybe they are kind of French style. They believe that the writer is dead after the book is published. And now the only author is the reader and also the translator, though that translator, he or she, then recreates this on his own. I respect that and I like it. I'm just staying open to any kind of demand if they would like to ask me anything. And Of course, the English is different because it's a language that I know. English translators always ask questions very much, so I'm able to read it. Sometimes I say, okay, can we do this in that way or that way? Mm-hmm. And it is a very productive, very fruitful dialogue between writer and translator. In that relationship, the leading person is the translator, not author. I'm just an helper there.
So you do oversee your English translation? Yes, I do.
Every translation is interpreting book in a different way. But the interpretation, not starting with translator, it starts with reader. In my own language, when I write the book in Turkish, when someone read it in Turkish, he or she is already translating it, because when I go to a reader's meeting, they read the book in Turkish, but they all interpret in different ways the same sentence, even though the same language that we are reading. So every reader, a translator actually, when translating the book from one language to another and using another language in between, sometimes it is necessary. I understand certain countries. And then so far, maybe 2-3 languages, you know, demanded to translate through English rather than Turkish. I could understand them. And I could say yes to that because I'm involved with English translation, and then I trust that translation. I know that it's reflecting the spirit of the story.
To address the issue of recent conflicts, the war in Ukraine, and the more recent conflict in Israel, do you think that the writer has a special duty to address injustice or to address conflict? What is his advantage, the situation? What good can a writer do in the face of death, conflict, destruction, you know?
I think that's very important. Now, I am president of Pan International. Pan International was founded 102 years ago. That means just after the First World War. Why writers came together and founded a writers organization just after the war? There was a reason, because they believed that war dividing nations, the war and politicians or armies only creating hatred between nations. They tell you, hate your neighbor and go and kill your neighbor. We are not talking who is right, who is wrong. Of course, sometimes we can say one is right, one is wrong. But the result is this. War is erupting every day in different corner of the world. When are we going to find a solution, and what is the solution? The solution is different if it comes from politicians, but for writers and for people of culture and for citizens, we have a solution. When there is a war in Ukraine, it's so simple. Ukrainian and Russian writers should read each other's books and then share the same language and to support each other. When the war, the latest war started in Israel and Gaza, on the first day, you know what we did? We reached out our fellow writers in Israel and also in Palestine, because those writers are together, because they believe in dialogue, they believe in peace, they believe in understanding each other, not killing each other. This is the answer to the politics of war. Otherwise, we won't be find a way to create a better world, because politicians always come to you and they say that, support me. I am right, the other one is wrong. And then you become just the tool of politicians. It doesn't matter whether that politician, Putin or Erdogan or someone else in this world. But you should, as a writer, reject the umbrella of politics. We are not in that shadow. We are the umbrella. We are writers. Politicians should take us to, should take our practice and an example, and they should improve dialogue and the ways of peace for everyone.
We seem to experience in the last 10 years this comeback of authoritarian regimes and leaders like Putin, Erdogan, but we can also quote from Hungary as well, Orban. We have also the case of Donald Trump, who also fits this description. How do you think we can counteract the success of this authoritarian discourse?
Thank you for asking this. I think we can do two different things on two levels. One is, as citizens, we should know that we should be active to defend rule of democracy, rule of law, and freedom of expression everywhere for journalists, for writers, and for all citizens. And in order to be able to defend this, we have to be active. Otherwise, then evil politicians will steal your power. And the second part that we need to do is we have to support the power of international institutions like United Nations. United Nations should be more powerful than any other country who are being part of regional conflicts. United Nations should come in every conflict and try to find a peaceful solution, a better solution for the parties of that conflict and for everyone. Otherwise, every year we see a different war or a new authoritarian regime in another country. This is a new wave of authoritarianism. If we don't stop this, maybe we are going to lose the world.
Ați ascultat podcastul Narativ. Eu sunt Cezar Gheorghe. Ne auzim săptămâna viitoare.